translation, in the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. The position of the Lord is always transcendental because the causal and effectual energies required for the creation of the material world were also created by him. He is unaffected, therefore, by the qualities of the material modes. His existence, form, activities, and paraphernalia all existed before the material creation. He is all spiritual and has nothing to do with the qualities of the material world, which are qualitatively distinct from the spiritual qualities of the Lord. Omagana tamaranda shaganandina shalakaya chakshiran militam jena tasmashi guruve namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadha shri vasari gaura bhaktarinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So nice to be here amongst the devotees. So Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that because the Lord is the cause of all causes, that makes him transcendental. So I was just going to ask everybody, what is the significance of something or somebody being transcendental? If somebody is transcendental, how would you be able to, what would be the difference between him and a mundane person or a mundane object? If you say this object is transcendental and this object is not transcendental, how would you distinguish between, how would you determine the transcendentalness of something? What does that mean? Okay, so that's one, rejoicing. If you're rejoicing from within, that makes it transcendental. Yes, what did you? Not controlled, yeah, that's one. That comes up actually. Prabhupada says there in the purport also, not controlled by the modes of material nature. So how would you determine whether something was controlled by the modes of material nature and something that wasn't controlled? From Krishna's perspective, yeah. From our perspective, so say we have a room full of scientists, and the scientists want to know, you know, the sincere scientists. But they just want to know, well, what is it? What are you talking? You're talking about, because there is a tendency in ISKCON, we get into cliches and we say, oh, Prabhu, that prasadam was transcendental, and I was in that kirtan and it was ecstatic, and you know, it was bliss. And but in terms of, you know, practical scientific analysis, when we say transcendental, something is transcendental. Like Mataji is saying, above the influence of the modes of material nature, Prabhupada's making the point that because he is the cause of all causes, he's outside, out with. Like there's a nice book out right now by Vyasaki Prabhu. I don't know if anyone's read it, Cosmology on, well, he's done a few books, but this one, Cosmology on Trial. So he's just very gently dissecting the whole theory of cosmology, and we exploded into existence from nothing. It was just a little speck, which was infinitesimally small, but infinitely heavy. And then it blew up. So he was just asking, well, at what point did time, at what time did time start? There's no time, there's nothing, it's just a void, it goes on forever, it's a big black void, abyss, nothing. just black silent, cold silence forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And there's a tiny speck floating around. And then time and gravity and all these wonderful laws suddenly come into place. So transcendental is something which is beyond. And that's what the scientists don't like. They don't like this idea that something was just always there, that you can't explain it. It didn't come from anywhere. It was just always there. That's what Krishna... And of course, when you say Krishna, it's like Prabhupada saying, you know, Krishna created, he created the material world, he created... But in one sense, if you can... You can't really imagine a dark sun, a sun that's dark. As soon as you think of the sun, you think of sunlight and heat and light. So when you think of Krishna, immediately that means all the energies as well. Although we know the sun is the source, but we could never think of a time when the sun was just dark. And we say, what's wrong, sun? You know, you're supposed to be hot and light. And give me a second, I'm just going to start firing it all out. It's just as soon as there's the sun, all the energies. So Krishna is transcendental. He's beyond time, space. We cannot measure according to the limitations within the material world. And then because Krishna is, then that means all his energies are as well. They're all there, you know. And that's a big lump to swallow, you know. If somebody's an atheist and he's trying to get his head around the idea that there's a God, and then the next minute, okay, I accept there's a God. Well, he has a yellow dhoti, and he has these marks on his feet, and he plays this flute, and this is his best pal, and this is his cow, and this is the grass, and the sky is blue, and he has a relationship with the clouds, and the sun comes out, and this happens at night, and he has a dance with the... So hold on a second, I said I can accept God, you know, but not everything, not all the whole thing, you know, but it's like, there's a lot of... When you accept Krishna as God, then that's everything. There's a lot that goes with that. And that's all just always been there. And that's hard. That's hard for the mind to get round, to understand it. And trying to understand Krishna, it's a little bit like, I don't know if you've seen these guys with the motorbikes. And they, first of all, they're in like a cage, and they're going round just in a circle. And then once they get a certain momentum up, then they actually go up onto the side of the... And then actually defy the law of gravity because of the speed that they're going. So our ability to understand Krishna in the material world, affected by the modes of nature, and how is something is transcendental, it's very, very difficult to understand. But if we can build up an intensity of devotional service, of chanting, of hearing, then although we are affected by the material energy like the iron rod, we become spiritualized. So then we start to be able to defy the limitations of what the material world is telling us, and suddenly we start being able to get our head around the idea that, oh yeah, yeah, Krishna is transcendental, he is beyond. It's not according to my conjecture or my previous experience or anything. This is just a divine revelation, and that divine revelation is something we have to earn. And I was just going through my mind this morning when I was chanting, it's actually really quite heavy. Krishna says, machita savada gani, says, if you become conscious. So the first thing that's heavy about that is he says, if. Because we're like, oh, Haribol Prabhu, you got your new dhoti on. Oh, I like your tea, like Haribol. Prasadam was great. But Krishna's saying, if you become conscious. It's not that we just can take it for granted that we're here, we're okay, we're Krishna conscious. You know, we're saved, we're the chosen few. He says, if you become conscious of me. And that's a big if, actually, you know, conscious that you can perceive Krishna. If you become conscious of me, then you'll pass over all the obstacles of conditional life, and all the obstacles are all the things that make us identify with the material world and its limitations. And then he says, if, however, you do not become conscious of me, but act out of false ego, and then he says, not hearing me. And I was thinking, because initially when I heard that, I thought, not hearing me means you didn't take notice of the first part of what I was just saying. You weren't hearing me. I said, if you become conscious, but not hearing me is our whole process. We're hearing Krishna's name. We're hearing. If we hear Krishna, if we actually hear Krishna, the pure sound vibration of Krishna, then we'll be conscious of him. And we're trying to chant our japa in the morning, trying to get through, well, personally anyway, all the mist of the material modes of nature and all the things going on in the mind, what was going on in the past, what's going to happen in the future. But what are we doing right now? How much of the consciousness is focused right now on what we're doing and just being? And if we can hear, then we become conscious of Krishna. And then if you become conscious of Krishna, then you'll pass over. So the only obstacle really all the obstacles of conditional life, the only obstacle really is, are you hearing or are you not hearing? That's the only real, because if you can hear, then there is no obstacles. The only obstacle, the only problem we have in Krishna consciousness is that we're not chanting Hare Krishna properly. That's the only problem. Anything else is a kind of sub-problem, a manifestation, a derivation of the original problem, which is that when we're sitting down, we're not actually hearing. And I always remember a really, really nice example. I was with a devotee. He used to be called Bhaktatma. He's Asutosh. He took me over to this shop. I always remember this. Hopefully you'll remember. This is a really good meditation for meditation. He took me over to the shop. It's a jeweler's shop. And he said, what can you see? And I said, oh, yeah, I can see a diamond ring and a gold bracelet. And he said, now look at the glass. What can you see now? So I can see my reflection. And he said, that's what chanting is like. Because if you focus on the holy name, then you don't see the mind. But if you're listening to your mind, you won't see the jewelry. You won't become conscious. And to do that, you have to focus. And the mind's like, oh, look at this, I can see myself. Oh, is my hair okay? Is my shaved head okay? There was one devotee, there was one man I met on Sankirtan, and he was laughing. He was telling me, the Buddhists shave their head to get rid of the false ego, you know, so they can be renounced. He said, but it was so funny, because he was a Buddhist for a while. He said, we all used to shave our heads. He said, we all used to run down to the bathroom. We'd all be looking in the mirror, wow, look at that, it's so smooth, wow. You know? So we're doing it to try and... But we're looking at that reflection. We identify with that. And then, you know, we're chanting for years. And then we say, it doesn't really work, this Hare Krishna. I've never seen Krishna. That's never really worked for me. But can you focus on just hearing the holy name and not what's going on anywhere else? And then you see the treasure. And then you pass over all the obstacles. And then you can understand what transcendental... Because you can't actually understand what transcendental is unless you can perceive it. You have to become conscious of it. And so in one sense, it's like it seems very straightforward what Prabhupada's saying, because we can accept it philosophically. I was listening to a lecture by Mahaprabhu, and he was saying, in ISKCON, we understand, we know a lot, but we don't understand as much as we know. So we could all say Matrasmasas Tekonteya Sitoshna Sukadukata Hagama Payano Nichas Tam Sitoshavadata. And then we walk on, oh, it's raining. Oh, it's terrible, the weather. I can't stand it anymore, and I've got a hole in my shoe, you know. But Prabhu, you just said tolerate. I know I said the verse, I know the sloka, I know, but the thing is, Prabhu, you know, I mean, look at the weather, you know. I mean, it's okay, Bhagavad Gita, but, you know, let's get real, you know. So we know a lot. But how much do we apply? How much do we really understand? That's the thing. We can, I mean, it's only a very short purport, but it's jam packed with so much. You know, so how much do we understand? Prabhupada, he says Krishna is not touched by matter. So what's the significance of not being touched by matter? We get a glimpse when we see Srila Prabhupada. We see somebody that was never touched by matter, the way he behaves, the way he... That's why it's really important to hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures, see the videos, and be aware. He's transcendent. You know, that's transcendence in action. You see Srila Prabhupada, the way he conducted himself. So he's not touched by matter. And then we get a glimpse of what Krishna must be like. He's not touched by matter. And it's interesting because we understand we have to change. Well, personally anyway, I really have to change quite a lot. You know, we understand that in Krishna consciousness, we want to become nice people. We want to change. We know we want to change. And I was reading a book about psychology, and it was explaining that the way to change is you change your paradigm. You change the way you look at something. That's how you change. So it's like if you see some devotee and he really annoys you, you're thinking, oh, here he comes again. So then you change the way you look at him, and then you can change the way that you react to him. And this person in the book I was reading about psychology, he was saying, back to Covey it was actually, in the Seven Habits, he was saying, we've all heard that, that this man was, his general practice on the train in the evening was, it had a long day at work, it was 5:30, he was just going to relax for that half an hour on the way back home, and just read a book, and, you know, just switch off. And then there's these kids three or four kids, and they're all messing around and fighting and squabbling, and so he's trying to put up with it, and eventually he goes over to the father and he says, "Do you think it's possible you could control these little brats?" And his father looked up. His father was kind of like this, you know. His father looked up. "Oh, I'm so sorry. Their mother's just died, and I just don't know how to deal with the whole thing." So then he completely, "Oh, you little boy, you nice little boy. It's just, you jump about as much as you like, and you make all the noise you need to make." And suddenly he was so understanding and caring and loving, because he changed the way he was looking at the whole situation. So we're trying to change the way we're looking at everything. We're trying to see everything as Krishna, Krishna's energy. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, you don't become degraded by the mind if you can see the super soul. So you see some nice lady and you're thinking, maybe I can enjoy. And then suddenly, no, hold on a second, Krishna's in her heart. I have to serve, I have to try and bring her back to Krishna. So you change the paradigm, the way you look at something, then you change the way that you behave. So Krishna consciousness is really getting into the heart of it. It's really getting into, don't bother you trying to change everybody else. You change. You know? It's like that famous quote from Gandhi, "Be the change you want to see in others." And there's a famous quote, they say, "The ungrateful person is teaching me how to be grateful. The nasty person is teaching me how to be kind. The rough and insensitive person is teaching me how to be gentle and empathetic. And although I have all these teachers around me, still I'm ungrateful to all these teachers." So if you see something and it's annoying you, then think, okay, well, that teaches me not to be like that. So we can start to change. The tendency is we think it'll be easier to change everybody around us. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with me anyway. I'm okay. You know, I mean, look at this, it's him. If he would just stop doing that in japa, every time in japa he's practically falling over. And that is annoying me. So I'm just wondering, I'm chanting and I'm just wondering, when's he going to fall over? You know, why doesn't he just get to sleep or do something? You know, I need to change him, you know. But no, if you change, then everything will change. How you look at everything will change. That's how you can have an effect. And that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. It's about us changing ourselves. It's self-realization. It's not everybody else realization. We're not looking at everybody else and thinking, if he would just do that, and if he would do that, and if he would just focus like that, and if he would stop eating three times as much as he is doing, you know, he wouldn't have any problems, you know. And he's like that. But then, do we look at ourselves? We need to spend more time just looking at ourselves. And if we do, then we'll be so busy trying to sort ourselves out and be self-realized, we won't have time to worry about anybody else. So we have to become a proactive element in communal living. It's all about how we synergize with the devotees around us, and the more we can appreciate them, the more we can serve them, the more we can have affection for them, the easier it is actually for us to practice Krishna consciousness ourselves, because we can just go along in the slipstream just by the fact that they're so enthusiastic and they're getting so much together. Especially in a big community like, you know, coming from where we've come from, we're like in Scotland, it's quite thin on the ground in the morning program, and every man is worth his weight in gold. And you have to turn up for Mangalarti, because if you don't, there isn't any Mangalarti. And if you turn up for class, there's maybe just two or three of us. And then we come here, and there's so much opulence and so much association, so it helps us to appreciate. So, but we've all got our roles to play in the great scheme of things. Scotland, Prabhupada wanted something to happen in Scotland, and I was on the phone to my wife yesterday, and she was saying, our deities are very fussy. There's only certain devotees they want to serve them, and so they've chosen who it is. And so that's a nice way of looking at it, I suppose. So maybe I should finish. What time do we, class finishes at 8:30? 8:30? Anybody have any questions?